Hi, everyone. This is Baker, and this is the Code.org CS podcast. Before we get started here, I just want a reminder to everyone that this podcast is experimental, and we're relying on you listeners out there to give us feedback, ask questions, and give us suggestions for other topics for podcasts. So please do that, and you can do that through normal channels at code.org, either through our forums for CS Principles or through bug reports or feedback reports in Code Studio. You can also just tweet directly at me and Brooke. My Twitter handle is at BakerFrankie, BakerFranke, and Brooke's is at RBOsborne, RBOsborne. Please do give us feedback, and we're hoping that this podcast will be a success. So thank you very much, and on with episode 2. Hi, everyone. Welcome back to the CS pod. We're kind of doing an emergency pod very quickly because as the school year started, we're recording this on Tuesday, which is the day after Labor Day, which is the day that I think most schools in the United States still start, still their first day of school. And in through Code.org feedback channels, we've been getting a lot of, I'll say, panicky kinds of messages about assessments. Teachers are looking at the materials and they're seeing these multiple choice tests and these other kinds of things, and even giving them to students for teachers who have started the year. And a lot of questions are coming up about the nature of assessments and what they are, and also for the Code.org curriculum, what's going on with assessments. So we have a special guest today, Katie O'Brien, who I'll let her introduce herself.
Hi, everyone. I'm Katie O'Brien. I'm a teacher in the northern suburbs of Minneapolis, Minnesota, and I am teaching CSP, APCSP this year, and I kind of did an unofficial pilot of it last year as well.
Yeah, so Katie was among people who, correct me if I'm wrong, Katie, didn't go through PD with us last year, but just kind of picked it up off the web and did your best, and now you're kind of more officially in the fold this year, right?
Yep, exactly.
Okay, I also failed to introduce myself. Once again, I'm Baker Frankie. I'm a curriculum development manager for Code.org, and my colleague is here with us.
Hey, everybody. This is Brooke Osborne, also from Code.org.
So we're here to do an emergency podcast about assessment. So, Brooke, can you kick us off? What are the kinds of things that are coming up that we want to talk to teachers about?
Yeah, so we're seeing lots of activity in the forums and emails coming in from teachers sort of having a few concerns about how to assess students and what they're learning in these first few weeks of school. So part of this might get a little bit in the weeds relative to the CS Principles curriculum that we've developed here at Code.org, but there's also a lot to talk about relative to assessments more broadly. So first, we've definitely noticed for our Code.org CS Principles teachers some questions related to using the assessments that are built into the curriculum. And if you have questions related to that, definitely go to the forum. That's the right place. We're going to focus our conversation here to assessments more broadly. So, Katie, I'm curious if you can talk to us a little bit about how you assessed student learning last year when you taught this course and sort of how that's shaping the choices that you're making this year.
Sure. So last year, I relied a lot on student reflection and also the kind of project-based assessments that the curriculum provided. So I did kind of a hybrid of student reflections and these projects. And I actually conferenced with students once a semester to talk about what they had learned so far.
Can you stop for a minute and describe how that works? How does student-teacher conferencing work?
Well, it was definitely an experiment. I'm really interested in this idea of we don't need grades to have students learn. And in fact, there's research that shows that as soon as we give students a grade, the learning tends to stop, their curiosity kind of goes down. So because I could kind of do whatever I wanted last year, I was kind of experimenting with this ungrading philosophy. So to do that, I had students actually come out with me in the hall for like 3 to 5 minutes. They had to prep ahead of time based on these learning targets that I had given them about what we had learned that semester, and they had to kind of show me evidence that they had learned it. And then they gave themselves a grade. And if I disagreed with that grade, I let them know. Honestly, I agreed with the grade most of the time. And like, actually, there are several times where I had to tell students that I thought they were, from what they had shown me, that they were doing better than what their grade had indicated. So then we would just adjust appropriately. And if their grade was lower, we talked about what they would need to do to raise it. So that's what that looked like. I also did the projects and used the rubrics that were given in the curriculum as another measure of assessment throughout the year.
So just to let everybody know what Katie's talking about, in the code.org curriculum and in the other curricula that we know about as well for CS principals, whenever there are projects that are similar to the they're practicing these portfolio projects that students need to do, they're called performance tasks. And in the code.org curriculum, we made rubrics to go along with them in which we tried to mimic the kind of the more, I guess, ambiguous language that students might find in the real performance task rubrics. So that's what Katie's talking about, is that is embedded in our curriculum. And so you used this project-based stuff. I wanted to say, Katie, so, you know, a lot of the anxiety that we're seeing from teachers, I think, when we were talking about assessments before, we were implicitly saying multiple choice test style assessments, like the kinds of things that students will see on the exam. And we have those embedded in our curriculum too. And, you know, talking about ungrading is great, but that might not help relieve a teacher's anxiety who's new to this and is looking to, you know, a multiple choice test is a really good tool to just get a survey of the kinds of things that students need to know. So what's your feeling on the multiple choice tests, the test in general, the tests that we have? I don't know if you've looked at them too closely, or sort of any sort of multiple choice style assessment, practice exam kind of thing.
So last year, I should mention, I had one class of 20 students. This year, I have a total of 105 students enrolled.
Whoa.
Wow.
Yeah. So this ungrading thing was an experiment, and I would love to do it in all my classes, but I know it's also not sustainable
right.
for that volume of students. So, and honestly, that's where a lot of these multiple choice assessments come in, is when we have to grade a whole bunch of things, and multiple choice assessments are really fast to grade. So I am really excited that there are multiple choice assessments included in the curriculum, because I knew going out of last year that I would need to do a better job of intentionally preparing my students to take a test this year, because there is a test, it's an AP course. There is a big part of it that is to get college credit, and that's through this test, part of which is multiple choice. So the fact that these assessments are out there, and I know that they are well researched and they mirror as closely as we can tell, like what the AP exam is gonna look like, given the limited information we have to go on, is a great starting point for me. So I'm planning on giving those assessments throughout the year. And then when I look at, you know, other curriculums, I definitely explored a little bit of CS50 and the mobile CSP curriculum. Mm-hmm. They also have assessment type questions in there, like the multiple choice questions. And I felt like I could modify or supplement what code.org did with maybe some of those questions, maybe some questions I came up with by myself. Because from what I saw, the code.org assessments are pretty short, which is fine, but if I want to assess more on through a multiple choice assessment, then I can add to that, and I think that is fine. But then there's also these projects that have a lot of room for assessment too in the curriculum.
And one thing that I think it's really important to point out about these assessments that you mentioned, Katie, is that they're really focused on modeling and mirroring what we know about the actual AP test that students are going to have to take. And part of what's important there is that students are never going to answer questions about the specific lessons that we teach in our curriculum or that anyone teaches in any curriculum, because that's not how the test is built. The test is built off of the learning objectives more broadly. So when we were constructing these questions and when we decided to make these questions, our goal was to make them relate to the underlying learning objectives. So there is a little bit of sort of mental work that has to be done to go from what exactly I did in this lesson to answering a question that covers the underlying learning objective, when that really is a reflection that you've learned the material rather than that you've just done the lesson. And I think that's an important thing to decouple.
I think there's a lot of opportunities for assessment throughout the unit. Like, you guys do have the bubbles at the end that have certain assessment questions immediately after the lesson. So, like, that's another opportunity for assessment. And then the kind of chapter assessments seem like a lot of application of what they learned, which is a higher level skill to be able to take what you learned and apply it to something else. And even the summer, I tried writing some of my own assessments. And when I looked at those questions, they're really hard to create or generate by yourself. So even having a few extra ones to give students some practice with is helpful throughout the course of the year in small bites.
Yeah, so I just, for people who are listening, which I say this on every podcast, may very well be the three of us. people should know that where the co.org assessments came from, like these little 10-question multiple choice tests that are situated about halfway through and toward the end of each unit, those came from a time when we tried to develop our own 50-question exam based on the best knowledge we had at the time of what the AP exam was going to look like. And so that was made last spring in April, before we had the 75-question practice exam, before we had the 20 questions that are in the course and exam framework book right now. And Katie's right. I mean, it took us a lot of time and effort to make those questions, because making like good multiple choice questions turns out to be harder than we thought it was when we started, and we had a special contractor work on making them. So what we did, because people were rightfully asking for assessments throughout, is we took that practice exam and broke it up into pieces where a certain question that we made, we would put it in the mid-unit assessment if we thought that the learning objectives from that unit or from the lessons there would come close to addressing it. So that's important to know, because what it means is these questions were made as an end-of-course exam, which means that they were written assuming that you had learned everything in the course already. And so if there's some element of the question that is part of what you addressed in the lessons in the unit, we kind of stuck that question there. And so I'm bumbling about, but I want to pose a scenario to Katie here, who's an on-the-ground teacher, to say how you would respond to this. So let's say that in this even short multiple choice thing that we have in the curriculum, 10 questions, there's a question in there that you realize after the fact or even before the fact that your students might not be able to answer, that it either wasn't, you didn't get around to covering it in the lessons, or maybe the lessons didn't even cover it at all. How would you frame this test for your students, knowing that there are going to be questions in there that are hard for them because they may not have fully addressed the topic, or they might not be able to answer it at all? Like, what would you say?
Well, I think, like, even, so I taught math before I was teaching computer science, and when I taught math, I was always previewing tests, like before I even taught the first day of the unit, just to see what was on the test, if it had already been created for me, which in my teaching context, it had been. And so I think that is helpful as you're teaching the unit, or as I'm teaching the unit, to know what is on this assessment. And also, I think it's happened to me before where maybe a question sneaks onto assessment that I hadn't prepared my students for, and they take it, they get it wrong. I apologize and talk about making mistakes and, you know, growth mindset and all this stuff. And then I'm not there to punish students for, you know, my error. So I just throw it out and we talk about maybe strategies. If you were to see this on the AP test, how would you approach this? Even if you didn't know the answer, like, what are some strategies you could do, because most likely they're going to come across one question on the AP test where they maybe don't know the answer. And so it's kind of a good time to talk about those strategies. Although in reality, I feel like a lot of our students, at least a lot of my students, have a lot of experience taking standardized tests. So they have a lot of those strategies ready to go. So, but it's still a good time to review them. And again, own your mistake, or allow students to kind of learn from that and introduce the concept then.
And I assume you mean simple strategies like eliminate the answers that have to be wrong, so that you're guessing between two things. Yeah.
So if we look at these assessments as specifically opportunities to prepare for the AP exam at the end of the year, Katie, do you have any, I guess, thoughts or strategies about how the way you use them might change between right now and, say, February or March, once you start doing more hardcore test prep? Or do you think you would end up rolling them out sort of the same way throughout the year?
Well, I think that's a really good question. As we get closer to that test prep, like, that is one thing I've tried thinking about, is the, okay, what does it look like when we get to, you know, the March, April timeframe for test prep? And I think it's a great time to, like, re-pull out these questions and ask them. Because, I mean, students take a lot of tests. They forget what they've seen. But it's good to go through. I could see definitely using it as, like, a final test prep, or one of the many final test preps you do, is kind of to go through all the questions, because they do seem, from what I've seen, to be a pretty good balance of what is in the curriculum framework. And, again, these first units, it's brand new. So their knowledge is, you know, lower than what we expect in February or March or April. So I think as we get closer, I would expect my students to be a little bit more confident in those multiple choice tests, just because they know more.
So I want to change gears here and kind of talk about expectations for assessments and expectations from assessments in this course. I think a lot of teachers have expectations about when you see a multiple choice test, about what it is and what it can be used for. And I kind of want to start a conversation about using tests like this in CS Principles in particular, and the role of assessment in CS Principles in particular, and what it is we actually need to prepare students for. And I know that Brooke has a lot to say on this subject.
Yeah, so if you had the fortune of joining us for TeacherCon this summer, you heard me talk a little bit about the assessments that we have integrated throughout the curriculum, but I just want to hit on that here, because I know lots of folks didn't make it to TeacherCon, and I think it's a good refresher. We sort of view assessment in the curriculum in a pretty holistic way. We assess both through very large projects that are these practice performance tasks that mix together what students have done over a half a unit or an entire unit, and give them an opportunity to apply that knowledge and that learning in a novel context. So we have that sort of style of assessment. And then we also have these formative assessments that are integrated throughout Code Studio as bubbles at the end of lessons. Those are great checks for understanding as you go, exit tickets, ways for you as a teacher to know what you need to reteach or if you need to reteach. And then we also have these practice AP style questions that give your students some experience thinking about the content at the learning objective level, as well as some experience with the actual format of a fixed response test that they'll have to take at the end of the year. So I think the most important thing to me is that we don't view assessment as any one of these things. We view assessment as the combination of these things, supplemented by all of the things that you do as a teacher, and sort of like checking in with your students and knowing where they are.
Yeah, and you know, I keep harping on the multiple choice thing, because it's something that a lot of teachers asked for, and we wanted to make something that would have expose students to the kinds of questions that are on the exam. But I think you, at least I'll just drop my opinion here. If I'm teaching CS Principles, you know, which is meant to be a class for everyone, and in many cases it's going to be students' first experience in an AP class, I think you have to be really careful about how you use those multiple choice questions and frame them in the right way. Like Katie was saying, you know, if there's a question there that's too hard, like apologizing for that. And I think that's especially true early on. You know, this is an emergency podcast because it's the first day of school. You know, there's ways that you can use these multiple choice assessments, you know, make them exploratory. Say, you know, give kids a partner and a time limit to go do it as well as they can. Maybe they have to go research stuff and then compare answers. Like, there's other ways that you can use the assessment as a teaching tool that isn't really assessing them on their content knowledge for things that you are worried about. You know, I would be very worried as a teacher about raising students' anxiety about their lack of content knowledge early in the course. To me, what I am concerned about assessing early on is more about behavior. It's more about computational thinking practice, getting students engaged and collaborating with each other. Those are the kinds of things that I want to assess, and I'd make rubrics or questions that ensure that students are doing that in the right way. And the content is almost secondary, because I'm less worried about the content accumulating as the year goes on.
I think one thing that is important is that the goal is for students to learn the content, not necessarily for them to like ace right. the exam right away.
Right.
Or ace the like assessment. So like in my school, I'm planning on giving students the opportunity to go back and do what you said about the research. So take the assessment, treat it seriously, do the best you can, and then go back and do some research. So kind of that lead learner model of like, okay, now let's figure out what went wrong and give students credit for that learning. They just learned it after the test, but that's still okay. They learned it, and that's the important thing, especially early on when, you know, I tried doing a lot of modeling of that growth mindset. So like, hey, congratulations, you learned it. Here's those points back. Like, right. That's what motivates the students. That's fantastic. I mean, at the end of the day, it's just points. They don't necessarily mean a lot.
Right.
At the beginning
and
of
I think
year.
You're right. And if you teach the course right and you do, you know, Katie mentioned the lead learner, which is the teacher acting as, you know, not the source of knowledge in the class, but the leader in seeking out new knowledge, that if you get the students sort of thinking the right way and investigating knowledge in the right way, even if there's a question on the test that you didn't cover at all, I mea culpa from Baker here, there were three questions on the first assessment that covered material that we know wasn't in the first lessons. It was a mistake on my part. But if you and I fixed it. But if you came across that, if students had the, you know, investigative skills and they accumulate those throughout the year, they could learn it on their own. Like, they could learn the content on their own, even if it's not in the lessons. And I think that is a really good way to go about teaching the class, because that's what we do as computer scientists, which is the whole point of the class.
Well, and this is also something that, you know, we spend a lot of time talking about how important it is to sort of structure and run this course to promote discovery for your students. If we turn around and assess in a way that is totally antithetical to that sort of philosophy, then we're not sending a consistent message to our students, and they're not going to believe that we mean it when they say, it's okay to make mistakes, we're here to discover together. So I think these are some really great strategies for reinforcing that idea and that philosophy, and that's essential if we want people to buy into it and if we want students to actually, you know, do the act of discovery.
And I think the key is that they're still learning exactly. throughout all of this. I mean, ultimately, I think all teachers know that the game day is I think it's May 5th, the final exam for the AP College Board, and they have those projects too. That's a huge part that I think we're kind of not discussing right now. Right. I mean, for me, I have, you know, some anxiety around the multiple choice because maybe because I can just visualize the projects a little better, but just knowing that like that's where we have to get to, and then this is all steps along the way. So right now, I want to know that my students learned what we were supposed to learn in Unit 1, and this is one measure of that. Ultimately, as we get closer, like, we're going to be narrowing down further onto that, but right now, I feel like, given all these things that we have available, the 10-question assessment, the formative assessments, and the practice PTs, like, that's a lot of, you know, assessment that's pretty formally even above and beyond what you see and hear in class. So, again, like, working towards that May 5th goal is important, but we're working towards it. Yeah. That's why.
And
we're
I'm
learning.
Like a broken record on this point, which is the whole reason CS Principles was invented was to change two things at the same time. And one was what students typically learn in a first computer science course, and also how they go about learning it. And a lot of people have expectations about what an AP course, especially in a quantitative subject, should be or should feel like, and often that involves a lot of testing and test type questions. And I really think we don't want that in CS Principles, you know, in general. And so, because we're trying to change how computer science is taught, there's all this research that showed why students hated computer science, and a lot of it had to do with the sort of like arbitrary set of facts that students had to know. So we're trying to change that, and it's really important, especially early in the year, that you hold the line on saying and having all of your actions back up your saying, this class is different. It's going to be different. There's go slow to go fast is my mantra, right? The content knowledge is going to come later, especially if you enable and empower students to find it for themselves.
And I think that's especially true for sort of demonstrating higher level content or deeper content knowledge. Like, it is different. It is one thing to regurgitate what I did in the lesson and to prove to you that I participated in the lesson by answering questions that are about that lesson. It's a completely different process in my brain for me to answer deeper questions about the underlying learning objectives. And that's something in particular that's going to take time, because that's not just about confidence with the material, that's about confidence with the overall subject matter of computer science and feeling like you can answer and talk about questions related to computer science.
Yeah, and Katie brought up the performance tasks, which are a huge thing, and as a teacher, that they make me nervous, because students have to do hours and hours of work completely independently for this project, whereas, you know, for multiple choice, worst case, you can just give them the list of essential knowledge statements and say, like, you have to know all this because that's what the questions are based on. But I think, as we've talked a lot about philosophy and about CS Principles and about assessment in general, it's an emergency podcast. Can we get practical to end here? Like, what are some practical things, you know, assuming that you drink the Kool-Aid and you buy into this sort of long-range view of assessment and enabling students, that doesn't change the fact that many teachers are in a situation where they have to show assessment of student work, you know, once a week or every other week or something, like in a grade book that's like publicly viewable. And so, you know, I think that that's where a lot of anxiety comes too, especially because at least in our curriculum, our little sort of mid-unit assessments are short, but there's also lessons where, you know, the little assessment section at the end of the lesson plan is also, you know, lacking a little bit. And so, can we just talk about some strategies for, like, okay, I need to assess something today. Like, what can I do?
So I'm pretty big on student reflection, and I know every teacher in school and district has their own set of, like, requirements as far as what needs to be in the grade book and when and what that has to look like. But one thing my students are doing is they'll be keeping ongoing, like, notes page where they're going to write one thing they learned that day and then connect it to two other things. So kind of that constant connections. And, you know, you can decide how to grade that as you will. Again, everybody's grades and assessment is kind of like the black hole of, like, professional conversations, because it's all different. There's no one right way to do it. It's like, it's kind of arbitrary. So I think it definitely depends.
And there are
certain
context. People who are into ungrading.
Yeah. Crazies. So yeah, I think the exit ticket is just one way to do it. Or even, like, yes, the test is going to be multiple choice. A lot of these topics, though, can be well assessed in an open-ended question, like, tell me how the internet works, or what is abstraction, or, like, describe to a friend how different number systems compare or similar. Like, you could easily give that on a Friday, last 10 minutes of class, free write sort of thing, and get a lot of information out of that and put it in the gradebook if you need to.
When I taught CS principles, like, my go-to move for the sort of the first test, the first, like, multiple choice test, was I gave an assignment to students to come up with their own multiple choice questions. Not necessarily multiple choice, but maybe like short answer or their own simple questions about what they had learned. And I graded them on the quality of their questions. But then we cobbled you cobble those together and have students take portions of other students' tests. And so they generate it all themselves. And it's a much lower stake. What ends up happening is students come up with impossibly hard questions because they want to, like, trick each other. They're way harder than anything that would actually be on the AP test. And
I've even done, like, give me an easy, medium, and hard question about this topic. I've done that more in mathematics, but I don't know why you couldn't do
it.
Well,
and you can also use it as an opportunity for students to give one another feedback on their questions. So if students do develop impossible questions and their classmates are saying, hey, this is impossible, why? Not just because it's hard, but talk to me in computer science terms explaining why this question is hard.
Yeah, I think I did something like I had every kid make 5 questions and then they had to take a 5-question test, and then they had to take the test of 2 or 3 other people. And the feedback form for that was not only did they have to answer the questions, they had to give feedback to the person about the questions that they wrote. Which was just, I mean, it worked wonderfully. It was too much data for me to deal with to grade the students, but they all got a lot out of it. And I was able to, you know, I knew who had made. It was basically a compliance grade early on. Did they make 5 questions? Were they about computer science? Were their answers correct? And as long as they met that bar, especially early, it seemed to reduce anxiety a lot. And, you know, we live in the future in, you know, it's like the year 2000 where we have documents that live on the web that multiple people can edit all at the same time, and it's a really easy way to, you know, collect all this stuff and disseminate it as well. So use those tools.
And speaking of grading, the other thing that is built into the curriculum that I don't want people to forget about are rubrics for many of the activities early and really throughout Unit 1. We have all of these projects where you're working with a partner to develop rules, communication rules, and alongside those projects we have rubrics. So these are not the big end of unit projects, these are smaller daily projects, but those rubrics could be tweaked slightly and used throughout on different activities that students do throughout Unit 1. So you can assess them on the actual products they're developing and producing in the activities themselves.
All right, great. So that's some practical advice. Let's try to wrap it up with more practical advice about how to actually think about assigning grades in your course. And Katie, you had something to say about this.
Sure. So, again, this is one example. Lots of different ways to do it. Take what you like, leave what you don't like. But my grade is essentially broken down into, like, if you think about a student's whole grade, is broken down into 80% what I guess I'm calling summative and 20% what I'm calling formative. So the 20% is participation in class activities, notebook checks, because we're doing some interactive notebooks, and then participation in surveys periodically. And then the summative is a lot of what we've been talking about. So there's those written tests, which are going to take a little bit more of a backseat, especially first semester. And then the projects are kind of the meat of that 80%. So at the end of each unit, they have a project-based assessment that students will be doing that will be assessed using the rubric, to tell you the truth, and then entered into the gradebook. And those quizzes along the way will also go into that summative category, but they'll have opportunities to demonstrate their learning past that. So that's what I was talking about as far as the like go back, research it, explain why you got it wrong sort of thing. So they should be able to demonstrate their learning on that in that category as well. And then I'm also having students do a blog each quarter too that will be in that summative category, because writing is really important in this course. And I think the unit projects start the writing process, but I want students to get even more practice with that writing, because I know as a math teacher, I was pretty surprised to see student writing samples last year from students who were, like, you look at their grades, they were strong students, but they're not used to writing outside of English class. And that definitely took some training in a lot of different ways, which is probably a topic for a different podcast. But so those will also be going in there as well.
Yeah, so I'm leading the witness here a little bit. But so, Katie, when you're planning for your course, are you looking at the multiple choice tests? Are you looking at the end of unit projects? Like, what are, you know, what are the big assessments for you? What are you working backward from?
It's honestly both. The biggest one is the project. But I'm also looking at those assessments too, the multiple choice assessments, to see where the path leads, I guess. But the project is the big one.
All right, great. So I think we'll end it there. Work backward from the projects, people, I think is the message. Because writing is a major part of the course that we're not used to. We'll end it there. I want to thank Katie so much for joining us at the spur of the moment on her first actual day of school.
Thank you. It's been fun.
Yeah. Yeah. How was school the first day?
It was good. It was freshman only, so I had one student. But
easing your way back in.
Like a brave kid.
Well, we should all be so lucky to have one student on the first day. Tomorrow will be more hectic, I assume.
130 times more hectic, yes.
130 times, yes. Well, good luck, Katie, and thank you so much for joining us this evening.
Thanks, Katie.
Thank you.
All right, that's it for episode 2 of the CS Pod. Join us next time when we'll talk about something else, maybe writing.
Thanks, everybody. Bye.
Okay, bye.